This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Linmark Sharit Abdullah and Wong Xiaoning. It is 7:06 in the morning on Friday, the 21st of June. And overnight, US stocks rose to a record. Sovereign bonds extended gains and the dollar slumped after central banks around the world continued a shift towards easier monetary policy. The S&P 500 opened at an all-time high, spurred by speculation that the Federal Reserve would cut rates soon enough to avert an economic slump. The benchmark retreated, though, after President Donald Trump hinted at possible retaliations for Iran shooting down a U.S. drone, and geopolitical tensions briefly overshadowed a fresh boost for risk assets from the Fed, Bank of Japan and Bank of England.
Yeah, so let's look at into some of the U.S. stock market. As you mentioned earlier, everyone is up. S&P 500, Dow Jones closed up about 1%. S&P, they closed above previous high set at the end of April. Dow closed just shy of its high from October last year. Nasdaq closed just behind, up by 0.8%, about 1.4% off all-time high set early in May. And at the same time, energy shares led the gain as Brent crude surged about 4%.
And this was amidst rising tensions with Iran. Brent crude is now hovering around $64 a barrel, still down from about 10% from a month ago when it was $72 a barrel. Meanwhile, U.S. Treasury notes yield for the 10 years dropped below 2% for the first time since November 2016, while the greenback sank the most since January. And gold, a safe haven asset, surged towards $1,400 an ounce.
Now on the line to talk to us a little bit more about global markets, we have Tim Mulholland, president of TJM Limited in Chicago. Good morning, Tim. Thank you for joining us. So with the Fed ditching its patient stance, while Fed Chairman Jerome Powell acknowledges an uncertain outlook, the market appears to be pricing a cut in Fed fund rates by July and another by year end. So do you think that a 50 basis point cut is enough to stave off a slowdown in the U.S. economy as well as satisfy markets?
Well, first of all, this is the first time since the election November of 2016 that the two-year note has been below 2%, traded below 2%. I think that the long end of the market and the market rates have told the Fed that they're too tight. You know, real rates with the funds rate of 2.5% and inflation, what, 1.5%, 1.75%, you know, that's a 0.75% positive real rate, so that's tight conditions. So they're following the market. And I think it's kind of safe to say the past few years, especially with the Fed dot plot versus the Fed fund futures, seems to me like you should be looking at Fed fund futures, WIRP on Bloomberg, by the way. And I think that's been the real market. I don't think the Fed really has a good handle on what they're doing, to be quite honest. And I think they're following the market. Will it help? I think it'll hurt the economy if they don't, I mean, that's what the market's telling us, especially with the tip break-even rate showing inflation down, plumbing the levels we saw last November.
And Tim, meanwhile, Brent has climbed above $62 a barrel. This after data showed a decline in U.S. crude supplies and record gasoline consumption, while geopolitical tension in the Middle East remained elevated after Iran said that it shot down a U.S. drone. Are we seeing another upcycle in the oil price?
You know, I'd say from events like that in the past, we'd have seen a bigger uptick. But I think what's really key to, from this entire situation, is that the U.S. is clearly the number one producer now in the world. And they're building pipelines from the Permian to the Gulf that's going to help, and I think they want to help the exports of crude, WTI. I think that the Brent WTI spread is going to narrow. This will probably be looking towards the fourth quarter of this year. And I think it's a situation here that, to me, oil prices, I think we found a low. I think that WTI is going to trade up to the 60, 65, which I think is equilibrium. And Brent will probably trade to the 70 to 72-ish, 73-ish area that you mentioned earlier as a recent high.
And thank you so much, Tim. That was Tim Mulholland, president of TJM Limited in Chicago, estimating that Brent would be trading at about the 70, 72, 73 level we've seen before this.
He even commented that in the past, a situation like this would actually drive oil prices even higher, which probably is indicative that all traders are mindful that a global slowdown would affect demand for oil.
All right. And in other international news, Slack has gone public. Now, Slack's shares opened at $38.50, now 48% above the reference price of $26 set yesterday, before heading slightly higher to close at $38.62.
So at the closing price, the company has a basic market capitalization of about just under $20 billion based on a share count of 190 million Class A shares as well as 310 million Class B shares. With that, Slack co-founder and CEO Stuart Butterfield joins the billionaire club, having held on to a 8.6% stake now worth about $1.6 billion.
Now, according to TechCrunch, Slack's successful opening wasn't a surprise. Of all the tech businesses to go public in 2019, the enterprise software as a service IPOs have performed the best. Now, according to SharePost, enterprise software as a service IPOs are trading on average more than 100% above their IPO price. Now, what was unusual about Slack was their way they got to the market, which was via a direct listing on the New York Stock Exchange.
Yeah, I think Spotify was the last major company to opt for a direct listing. And it's interesting because this is an option that for companies that basically don't face an immediate need for new capital. It's also cheaper since fees are minimal for the financial advisors because you don't have to go through underwriters and so forth. And while a reference price is set based on private placements and other factors, the trading price can still be different. I guess the danger here is that there's no lockup for the shareholders, right? And essentially, there is a danger of volatility tanking the share price subsequently.
Yes, because there are no underwriters to actually have this price stability action, which underwriters have a role in. In Malaysia, typically, that happens quite a fair bit. Mm-hmm. But there is this new option, like what we discussed, which is a direct IPO. There are myriad of advantages of one of which is that the company doesn't issue any new shares, and that's because they don't need to raise any additional capital. It's a primary way for companies to sell their holdings to investors while bypassing the typical formidable fees and requirements of an underwriter. No lockup period, as Lynn said, and no discovery price action by the brokers.
Yeah, so I mean, this is taking stock as to what's happening as well. I guess they've been monitoring the development that's been happening on Spotify as well as other IPOs like Uber and also Zoom previously, which were volatile.
Yeah, and they took the traditional IPO approach and that didn't really help their share price either.
I think there's been some discussion over the fact that if Slack's IPO does do very well, they still do have an option to go for a slightly more traditional sale after that, because by going for a direct listing, they didn't dilute their existing shareholding at any rate, right?
Yeah, and interestingly, if we look at the most important thing, which is the saving of the fees actually for Slack, and we use Spotify as an example, they only paid $35 million for its financial advisors. So some stock market pundits say that they saved as much as $100 million by going through the direct route. But when you think about it, on the other flip side, some of the investors or some of the investment bankers, of course, you know, who are out of this fee game, they argue like, well, you know, we should earn the fees are definitely less because basically there are no new shares and we don't have to underwrite anything. So hence there's no risk. So we should earn less fees.
Okay. Well, at the same time, it's interesting to see their valuation. It's apparently more than double. The initial valuation was about $7 billion and now it's up to about $17 billion. That's what they're expecting from this direct listing.
But as you know, Slack is actually loss-making.
Just like Spotify, just like everybody else.
All these
tech companies.
All these tech companies, well.
That Shanning would never buy into because she likes her companies to make money.
Yeah, well, they lost $140 million in its last fiscal year. Revenue did surge a healthy 82% last year, but that's apparently a pullback after sales more than double in the prior year. Now, the point to note is that Slack was listed at a price-to-sales ratio of 30 times because there's no earnings, right? So you can't do it on a PE basis. But the flip side to that is that for the next result season, the market is expected to see strong revenue growth of at least 30% or more. Otherwise, the share price will probably pull back.
Now, we ran a Twitter poll actually yesterday asking how many of you use Slack. 51% of our respondents said they'd never heard of it. 30% said they used it, while 22% said they've heard of it but don't use it. And so in brief, I mean, Slack is an internet platform that allows teams and businesses to communicate with each other, so essentially a collaboration hub. It's useful if you do a lot of your work offsite or without a permanent office space. But I it was a little bit surprising to me because, you know, when I guess when you are opting for a direct listing like this, one of the things that you have to have is you have to have good brand recognition. Mm. So perhaps they are, but I guess perhaps they are more recognized in the US, for example, yeah, than in other parts of the world.
Yeah, at the same time, I mean, there's definitely a demand for collaboration software like Slack. The name, I just can't get over it. It is ironic when it is a productivity and collaborative app. But if you compare with, for example, Spotify, what is their business? Media business. Right now, they can still generate revenue through their media, but it's just a matter of getting people to take the premium service, which, so there is the incentive. So there's two revenue streams. Advertisement when it's free, and but with Slack, that's the thing. I mean, while they are free, and they have a premium service option as well, but when they are free, I mean, what sort of revenue options do they have?
Well, I think the market is very interested in anything that is subscription-based and is cloud-based, which is exactly what Slack is all about.
And there have been some research to show that the global market for workplace collaboration softwares like Slack is expected to hit $3.2 billion by 2021. That's according to research firm IDC. Now, we're going to be having a couple of messages for you, and then we'll be coming back with more fascinating discussions on local news. So be sure to stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.